I'm Anthony Kay, and this is Sports Fluent. On this week's episode, our special guest is Harrison Brown from Head Check Health. He'll be talking to us about concussion protocol. Then to the NFL, we'll be previewing the NFC South, one of the toughest divisions in the league. Then to the NBA, we'll tell you what to watch for in the first round of the NBA playoffs. Our WNBA previews continue, and this week we're taking a look at the Indiana Fever. Then to the NHL. The second round of the playoffs have begun, and we'll tell you who's coming out of the second round with our predictions and tell you how we did in round number one. And lastly, in the fix, the Toronto Maple Leafs. My guest this week is Harrison Brown. He's the CEO and co-founder of Head Check Health. Head Check helps over 800 organizations, from Major League Soccer to local youth teams, to ensure concussion protocols are followed, risk of injury mismanagement is minimized, and athlete concussion recovery is supported. You can find all their information at sportsfluent.com. Now here's that interview with Harrison Brown. Hope you enjoy.
Welcome, everyone. We're here with Harrison Brown, who is the CEO and co-founder of Head Check Health. Harrison, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Tony. Appreciate you having me on.
Oh, thanks for coming on. So we brought you on today. We want to talk about what you're doing, obviously, in concussion protocol. So maybe you can start off by telling us a little bit about Head Check and what you do.
Absolutely. So Head Check, we're a digital health company, and digital health is kind of a newer area of technology. But what we do is we make software for sports organizations to better take care of their players with respect to concussions. So part of that is giving them digital tools to actually run tests, manage the injuries when they're actually happening. But a big part of that is also connecting the patient with the team and giving them ownership of their data, allowing that data to travel with them team to team, sport to sport. And I guess the last thing that we do to kind of make this a little bit different is we also work with the leagues to essentially audit the teams to make sure that they're actually providing those patients the correct care. And it's a little complicated, but basically, 5-10 years ago, everybody started freaking out about concussions and everybody raced to put out these protocols that said, hey, this is a serious injury. To take care of our players, we're going to do A, B, and C. And so what our tool does is it allows them to easily and properly do A, B, and C, and then also audit them to check on a league-wide basis, is everybody actually doing A, B, and C? And that'll obviously benefit the patients.
So there's obviously, you're right, it's been a huge thing. I remember, as I want to say a kid, but in high school playing football, and I'd take a hit to the head, I'd be kind of dazed a little bit, and they'd just say, hey, you got your bell rung, just shake it off. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've learned that that's a bigger issue. What are some of the things that I guess the leagues were doing, I don't say wrong, but things that they can improve on, things that they have improved on, and then what's maybe the next step in the process to really catch mm-hmm. these things early?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think, just to give you perspective in terms of where we're at as a society on concussion safety, we're still at the very, very early stages of it. We, from a scientific perspective, we don't truly understand exactly what's happening. And I guess the first step that we've taken is trying to acknowledge that it's actually a serious injury. And there are still people, similar to your background, where people are still doing that, right? Like there's still kids that are being told to suck it up and get back out there. So I guess like the first step that's really taken is people acknowledging it's an injury, acknowledging that it's serious, and then, providing education. And I think that education is critical because companies like ours, where we're actually selling software to improve this issue, if people don't understand the value of why we need to improve it or why they would even buy this software, it doesn't really happen for us, right? So the first thing has been education. And then as I said, protocols were kind of step two. So, okay, we know it's a bad injury. We're educated on it. All right, let's put a protocol in place so that we're actually, looking for it. We're testing for it. We're treating it. And that's kind of, where we're at now. And the reality of it is a lot of these protocols came out way too soon and people just don't follow them. You know, having a protocol and actually following a protocol are two very, very different things. And in the sports world right now, that couldn't be more true.
And so how are we treating them now, right? You hear a lot of things. And listen, it's mostly I hear it is in football, but really this is something that affects all sports, right? Like I know you work with, I believe, MLS. But I mean, anyone who plays hockey, obviously boxers, you know, basketball. I know I got a concussion taking an elbow in the back of the head. You know, it's every sport that really is affected by this, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just sports too, right? Like
you're right.
Head check alone works with about 15 different sports, everywhere from, you know, the typical stuff like football, hockey, down to, you know, cheerleading and sports like that where you wouldn't typically think, but they're actually quite serious concussion sports. But it's an extremely widespread issue. You know, motor vehicle accidents as well. I think that's a huge part of concussion in clinics and hospitals. And so it's a very, very widespread injury. And I think really the next step for the industry, I guess, is to really start doing things properly. And we haven't done much yet. I think we're still in the early stages, as I mentioned. And the next steps for head check, I think, are we're trying to really grow, you know, not only the knowledge base of sports and outside of sports on concussions, but do it in a way where, you know, we're not seen as this evil company that's trying to monetize it. We're just simply trying to get better tools to achieve our goal. And our goal here is to make sports safer.
Right. No, for sure. So how did you, now I know that you played on a national rugby team. Was it a concussion that you suffered that caused you to get into this, or how did you come up with the idea for head check?
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it wasn't a single concussion that really, you know, started things off for me. I did play, you know, many sports for many years. I played rugby at a very high level. Had some head injuries from that. My sister also had some head injuries, which was a little bit scary because I'm obviously protective of her. But really where my eyes opened was when I started getting into the research world. And I went to UBC to do a master's and start my PhD there. And when we started working at the higher levels, like we were looking at data from, you know, all different levels of sport, but even at the highest possible level of sports, people were not doing things properly. And, you know, every single article that you read, every single study that's done, it's all pointing in the same direction, which is this is a much, much bigger issue than we think. And when we started looking at, you know, what are the tools out there that potentially could help solve those issues or help make them not as serious, there was really nothing out there that was able to provide what we thought was necessary at the time.
Right. Now, that being said, what can we do? So obviously for those of us that have kids that are playing sports or not playing sports, what are some of the things like the everyday person should be looking out for? And I'm kind of going to ask you a two-part question. We obviously now have those of us who follow football have heard of CTE, but what are mm-hmm. some of the other things that can be affected by concussions or head shots?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe to start off, I'll pass that back to you. Like, what do you think's happening right now? What do you think sports organizations where kids are playing sports are, what do you think they are doing and they should be doing?
Oh, I'm going to take from what you've already said is they're probably not doing enough. However, you know, the ones that I do see is if someone, you know, feels dizzy, you know, if there was an obvious, a hit to the head, they'll pull them off and ask them how they're feeling. Like, and that's really all I've seen. You know, my kids play soccer and you don't even think about when they're heading the ball, that's actually, you know, their head is hitting a ball. There's some force, there's some trauma, and you see them kind of sometimes wobbling off a little bit. And yeah, it's a dark room, you know, some quiet time, but I don't know. And that's why I was so excited to get you on. I want to know too, because I've got kids and, And again, as a former, you know, having played football and basketball and some other sports, I know that I've probably, like I said, it was always my bell was rung or I'm seeing stars. Mm-hmm. I know that was probably something more serious.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's interesting to hear that answer because that's kind of the consensus right now is that something's happening. People are doing something, but they're not really sure whether that's the right thing that's happening. or, right. or they don't have yeah. any, they don't have any peace of mind that, you know, if your kid goes out playing soccer and potentially has a head injury that needs to be, you know, looked at, you're not really sure what the process should be, and you're not sure whether the process has been followed, whatever happens, right?
Right.
So I guess that's where we're at, right, is there is a protocol for your children's team. There just has to be, right? And sometimes right. it's a protocol that's put out by the national body. So, you know, for example, Hockey Canada has a concussion policy. They have a document. They have a process that must be followed every single time there's a potential concussion. And the same would be true for many other sports. And you might get, you know, more advanced protocols put out by individual leagues or individual teams if they have, you know, somebody that really cares about the issue. So that's what's happening right now, is that there is a protocol. Nobody really knows what it is. Nobody really knows whether it's being followed. And so that's where the education part comes into it, right? You know, you need to be better versed as to by the team what that protocol should be, so that if it happens, you can obviously, you know, check to make sure that it has happened and give you peace of mind that it's safe to send your kid out in the field. So that's kind of where we're at. That's what people are doing. In terms of, you know, what else people need to be looking for or should be doing, you know, I strongly believe that you can't do these things without technology. You know, when you put out a protocol that's, you know, just a policy document saying that you need to collect certain information or you need to, you know, send the child to this place or that place, if you're not tracking it with technology, you can't audit it to see whether it's actually happened or not and find issues. And as you know, with humans, we're biased, right? Like if there's a really good player and it's a really important game and the player wants to play and the parents want the kid to play and you're the coach, you're put in a really, really tough position.
Yep.
So that's what's happening right now, is we've got policies, which is great. We've got people not following the policies, and because we don't have technology implemented, we have no idea who's doing it, who's not doing it, who's doing a good job, who's doing a bad job. But, you know, in terms of other things, just to answer your second question there about, you know, other things to be aware of, you know, CTE is a super controversial issue. There's a group out there in the U.S. that's really, you know, very firm with their wordings on, you know, kids shouldn't play sports because they're getting brain damage. And then there's other groups that are coming out and saying, you know, hey, you know, we're not entirely sure whether CT even exists. And so there's confusion in the research yeah. world. There's confusion with the experts. And so things to look at, should you be aware of CT? Yeah, absolutely. You should read articles about it every once in a while. You should form your own opinion on it. But when it comes to concussion, I think the biggest thing is just to get educated on it. You know, you mentioned going into a dark room. That's not a thing anymore.
Oh,
like they.
I clearly need to do some more research.
No, a quiet room that you know doesn't have, you know, surgery lights in it to do a test obviously is appropriate. But there's a lot of research out there right now which says if you have a concussion and you go into a dark room and, you know, you don't look at your computer screen or your phone screen for weeks on end, your recovery will actually plateau. And part of the reason behind that is your brain needs stimulus coming in to be able to process it. And if you just remove all stimulus coming into your brain, it actually does plateau. So yeah, it's little things like that. Like yeah. it's as I mentioned, we're still super early on. And things that people that they should be doing is A, be aware of the protocol. You know, B, ask questions if you're not sure whether that protocol is being followed. And I guess, you know, lastly, if you're concerned that follow is not being followed properly, and you know, people are skipping steps and they're putting kids in danger, call it out, right? And it's tough at the community sport level because you've got volunteers, right? You know, you've got parents that are volunteering to be the coach, parents volunteering to be the safety officer, parents volunteering right. to be the president and the vice president. And these people have other jobs. And so unless somebody calls it out, we're going to have to wait until somebody gets seriously injured. And that's not what we want.
Too late, right? Yeah. So where can you go to
you know, where can the everyday person, where can people go to find out more information about this? And then obviously, where can they go to find out more information about HeadCheck?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really good free resources online on education. You can, you know, go to websites like the Canadian government has a concussion, you know, website. There's NGOs like Parachute Canada, which provide education and actually protocols as well. And they've got some great experts there. In the U.S., the CDC actually has their own concussion stuff as well. So there's a lot of really good free stuff out there. You know, in terms of HeadCheck, you know, what we do, we provide that technology to the organization to actually follow the protocol. We don't determine the protocol. That's up to the super smart medical people. We just make it functional. And so if teams have a protocol and they're not really sure if it's being followed or they want to, you know, level up in terms of what they're doing, they can go to our website. It's just headcheckhealth.com. And, you know, we've got the different products broken out by the level of the sport that they're in.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to end it on a bit of a sour note for you. So I understand you're a bit of a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. and you had the misfortune of watching them being eliminated. What are you thinking? Is there hope for these guys, or are we going to be going through years and years of the same kind of stuff?
Oh, I mean, the thing.
It's the toughest question of the day for you.
Yeah, it is.
I think they can give you a hard one.
Well, the thing with COVID is I think the world's obviously been changed forever. And you know, there's so many curveballs that have just, you know, taken place right now. And, you know, just to say that the future is bright or not bright from the Leafs is difficult to say. But what I will say is the disruption that's happened to the sports world, all this stuff might actually be a good thing for the Leafs, because it's not, if this is a normal year and what happened, you know, happened in a normal year, I think it would be very, very difficult for fans to stomach, and we can kind of brush things off saying it's COVID now. But I think because of COVID, they'll get another shot at it next year. And if they do nothing next year, then I think you got to blow it up.
Well, okay. We're going to give them spoken like a true Leafs fan. We're going to give them a pass for COVID. I love it. I'm going to stick with that one.
The COVID excuse. Yeah.
The COVID excuse. I'm going to do that for every sport where my team loses this year.
Even if it's not COVID.
Even if it's not COVID, I'm still going to use it. Yeah. I think I got a good year I can use that with. I really appreciate your time, Harrison. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Every week, we're going to be previewing a different division from the NFL. This week is one of the most exciting divisions and one of the most competitive, I believe, this year, because it's the NFC South. We know about Tampa Bay. They picked up Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, LeSean McCoy, in addition to what they already had in Godwin and Evans and Brate and Howard. This is going to be maybe one of the most potent offenses that we've seen, and I'm curious how Bruce Arians is going to use all his pieces. The only thing stopping Tampa Bay last year from really going into the playoffs and making some noise was 30 interceptions, and that is now going to be eliminated. I doubt we're going to see 30 interceptions from Tom Brady. Does he still have the arm strength to get the job done? I guess we'll find out. At his age, we know for one thing, he definitely has the mentality to lead this team deep into the playoffs and maybe make a Super Bowl run. To New Orleans, they didn't do so shabby themselves. They already had a great offense with a good balance of run and pass, and they just added, Emmanuel Sanders. This team is going to be scary. The only thing that's stopping Drew Brees and the Saints from going deep into the playoffs and making a Super Bowl run is going to be Drew Brees on the road. He tends to be a little shaky versus what he plays at home. So let's see if he can put all that together. The Falcons. The Falcons have picked up Todd Gurley. Is he healthy? Will he play to the level that he played to a couple of years ago? Or will we see the shell of himself that showed up last year for the Rams? That's going to be a big piece in the Falcons' puzzle. I like Matt Ryan. I love Julio Jones. And I think their defense is better than maybe we give them credit for. So they're going to be solid this year as well. And then Carolina, they haven't really done anything earth-shattering other than bringing in Teddy Bridgewater. Now, I say that's not earth-shattering because I might not be as high on Bridgewater as some other people are. So when I rank the four teams in this division, I really am doing it based on who I think the best quarterbacks are, because they all have pretty good offensive teams. They have weapons. Obviously, Carolina still has Christian McCaffrey. So there's pieces there as well. The defenses are good in each one of those cases. I think Carolina might have the best defense. And I say it, you can hear me with shakiness in my voice, because we still got to see how each team put these things together. I think overall, however, the Tampa Bay Bucks are going to come out and surprise some teams with their ability to push the ball downfield and defend. So I've got Tampa Bay winning that division by a game. One slip up, I think, of the Saints, which will put them as the top seeded wild card team. Don't forget, this year there's three. And so they'll finish one game behind Tampa Bay. I'm picking Tampa Bay to win about 13 games this year, New Orleans at about 12. Then I'll have Atlanta coming in beneath them and Carolina bringing up the rear. As I mentioned, I'm not really high on Bridgewater. I think Carolina's probably a 8-8, 7-9 team. And the more I think about it, the more I want to drop that number down, maybe by a game or two. So I got Tampa Bay winning the division with 13, New Orleans at 12 wins. Atlanta's going to come up in third. They're going to be pushing for a playoff spot, but I only think they're probably going to be 9-7. And then bringing up the rear in the division is the Carolina Panthers. Let me know what you think and who you think will win the NFC South. You can reach me at AnthonyK@sportsfluent.com. This week's episode of the Sports Fluent Podcast is brought to you by Thrive Fantasy. Come prep up on Thrive Fantasy this season. Thrive Fantasy is a daily fantasy sports app for players' props. They've eliminated the need to do countless hours of research because they only ask you about the top-tier athletes in each respective sport. Use promo code WTN when you sign up, and you will receive an instant $20 bonus on your first deposit of $20 or more. You can download Thrive Fantasy on the App Store or Play Store or by visiting their website at thrivefantasy.com. Sign up today and prop up. And now let's move to the NBA. There are some potentially great matchups in the first round. And as much as the bubble has been great to get us back into the NBA feel, I can't wait for the playoffs to start on the 17th. So let's run through the Western and Eastern Conference matchups, who I think will win, and what you should watch for. So let's kick it off right at the top with the Lakers versus Portland. This is going to be Damian Lillard's, can we call it a coming out party? Do you not know how great Damian Lillard has been throughout his career? I know we give him a lot of flack because he hasn't won. Well, yeah, in the era that he's playing with the Super Team Warriors and the Super Team Heat, it's been very difficult for Portland even to get out of the West. But that doesn't mean Damian isn't a beast. Now, as much as I still think the Lakers are going to pull this one out on the backs of LeBron and AD, look for this game to go 6, maybe even 7 games. One of the things, and you're going to hear this throughout, is that home court advantage is a big factor in the NBA. With the bubble, that's not the case anymore. Everybody is playing on an equal playing field. Now, I know the NBA is in talks to make things more advantageous to the teams that should be the home team, whether it be pumping in crowd noise, etc. It's still an equal playing field, and that is going to be a factor in this year's playoffs. Look for Portland to push it, like I said, to 6 or 7, but the Lakers to come out, but the best player to be Damian Lillard. Then to Houston. The Rockets and the Thunder made a huge trade in the offseason, sending Chris Paul to OKC and Houston getting Russell Westbrook. The thought was OKC would then flip Chris Paul and start a rebuilding process. That didn't happen. Chris Paul stayed, and the Oklahoma City Thunder surprised everybody, and it has their coach in the conversation, if not the winner of the coach of the year. We weren't expecting much out of the Thunder. And this is now a 4-5 seed matchup. Does Chris Paul come out and show the Rockets that he is still one of the elite point guards in the NBA? Can D'Antonio's style with Westbrook and Harden win in the playoffs? It still remains to be seen. Will the small ball of the Rockets create fits for OKC? I've got OKC in a huge upset, even though it's a 4-5 matchup, winning the first round in 7, right down to the wire. Then we have the Denver Nuggets against the Utah Jazz. Denver is one of those sleeper teams. They seem to have all the talent in the world, but no one seems to really talk about them. They always seem to be missing something. And as much as I like the Jazz, I'm going to go with the Nuggets here in 6, just because I think they're the better team. They have the better players. I go with the Nuggets on this one. Not that it's going to be easy. You've got some great talent in Utah, but I got the Nuggets winning this one. Lastly, in the West, my second favorite matchup in the West is the Clippers and the Mavericks. I can't wait to see what Luka Doncic can do in the playoffs. Unfortunately, it's going to be against probably one of the toughest defensive matchups he's going to face. They're going to throw Patrick Beverley at him, Kawhi Leonard at him, Paul George at him, all great defenders. I think they're going to make his life miserable. And if some other players on the Mavericks don't step up, this is going to be a pretty quick series. I have the Clippers in 5. To the Eastern Conference now, where the Bucks will face the Magic in the first round. Guys, let's be honest. This one's going to be a sweep. I actually like the Magic, but they are no match for the Bucks and Giannis, who's going to look to show everybody why he should be the MVP or is the MVP of the regular season. Look for the Bucks sweep of the Magic. Then, to my Eastern Conference matchup that I am most looking forward to, the Miami Heat and Jimmy Buckets against the Indiana Pacers with newly crowned superstar of the bubble, TJ Warren. It's going to be chippy, there's going to be some scuffles, and this series is going to go 7. And look for the Heat to come out on top, but I mean, this is going to be a fun one to watch. And then, we have the Celtics and the Sixers, two teams that were picked by many to come out of the East, but only one is even going to make it into the second round. The Celtics are deep, they are young, and they are talented. And they're going up against a 76ers team that I believe after this season will do what is needed to be done, which is separate Embiid and Simmons and build around one or the other. I see one of them getting traded and this team going in a different direction, as I think they should. I've been saying it since middle of this season, if not earlier. So look for the Celtics to come out of this one in 6. To the Toronto Raptors. This team wasn't getting the respect it deserved in the first 60 games prior to the pandemic as defending champs and as the second seed in the East. But since the bubble has started, a lot of other teams have started to take notice that this is a good team. They play great defense, maybe one of the top 2 or 3 best defensive teams in the NBA. They're consistent on offense, and they have a great coach, probably the coach of the year. At least that's my pick. They're going to make quick work of the Nets, although the Nets will steal one. Look for the Raptors to come out of this in 5. So to recap, we have the Lakers going 7 against Portland. OKC upsetting the Rockets. The Nuggets taking care of the Jazz. And the Clippers making quick work of the Mavericks. In the East, the Bucks sweeping the Magic, Miami coming out of a tough 7-game series with the Pacers, the Celtics taking out the 76ers, and the defending champ, the Toronto Raptors, getting by the Nets. Let me know what you think and send me your comments. AnthonyK@sportsfluent.com. As we continue our weekly view at the WNBA, this week we preview the Indiana Fever. Last year they finished 13-21, which put them in ninth and just out of the playoffs. This year, after selecting Lauren Cox third overall, they have a new outlook. The team owns the WNBA's record for most consecutive playoffs appearances with 12 straight. Unfortunately, that ended 3 years ago in 2016. Since Tamika Catching stopped playing and retired, the Fever have been a lottery team ever since. Last year, however, they showed some signs of life after the All-Star break when they went 7-6 over their last 13. Can they build on that success of the end of last season? Now, we know this year is going to be different, being in a bubble, a lot of off-season moves, players not coming due to COVID. It's going to be a different year. However, they did make a change at the GM and coach level, bringing in Catching, their best player, as the new GM, and having Marianne Stanley take over behind the bench. Stanley had served as an assistant with the Washington Mystics since 2010. Stanley inherits a team that is loaded with young talent. 8 of the 12 Fever's players are either rookies, sophomores, or in their third year. Only one player, Dupree, has more than 5 years of experience in the WNBA. Some might look at that as a negative. I look at it as a positive. A new coach with championship pedigree coming in with a new system and a young team that can really be shaped and molded and hopefully have the exuberance and the excitement to really push forward and get this team back into the playoffs. So I look forward to seeing how the Fever do this year. But don't take it from me. Here's what the Indiana Fever have to say about it.
Indiana Fever is the team to ride with because we've got a lot of youth, a lot of high-energy players, fast-paced game, high-intensity, and nobody wants to watch half-court basketball like the Spurs and the Seattle Storm. So, should be a good run for us this year. Definitely trying to make a playoff push. It's been a couple of years, so check us out.
Now to the NHL. Let's run through the second round matchups. But first, how did we do in round one? Well, not too bad. We picked 5 out of the 8 series correct. The 3 that we got wrong, Chicago beating Edmonton. I really thought the home team advantage was going to give them a little bit of a push to take out the Blackhawks, but I was wrong. The Toronto Maple Leafs, that's what I get for betting on them. And when I told you I felt very uncomfortable about that pick, now you know why. And lastly, I think the one that surprised all of us, because anyone outside of Montreal who picked the Habs to upset the Penguins, I'm going to call out and say you're a liar. So that being said, let's look at the matchups now. We have Las Vegas versus the Blackhawks. And although the Blackhawks burnt me once, I'm going to go with them to lose to the Golden Knights. I look for Las Vegas as one of my final 4 teams, so I've got them beating the Hawks. Then to Colorado and Arizona. The Coyotes came through for me in round one, but you know I've got the Avalanche taking the whole damn thing, so I've got the Avalanche winning in that series. Then Calgary and Dallas. I'm going to go with the Flames to upset Dallas in this round and move on to play St. Louis, who will beat the Vancouver Canucks. To the other end, we have the Philadelphia Flyers, another one of my final 4 teams, playing against the Montreal Canadiens, who proved if you have a great goaltender, anything is possible in the NHL. However, I got to stick to my guns, and if Philadelphia is going to be one of my final 4, I have them beating the Habs. Then we got Tampa Bay versus Columbus. Tampa Bay looked really good, and in that 5 overtime game last night, they showed me something that I think really surprised me about them because I was a little bit iffy with them heading into the playoffs, but I'm going to stick with them taking out the Columbus Blue Jackets. Then to Washington against the Islanders. This one's going to be a quick one for me. I've got the Capitals knocking out New York. Then to Boston against Carolina. Again, you know I have Boston in the final, so I've got to pick Boston to pick Carolina. So there's the overall view. In the next coming days, we'll give you in-depth analysis on each one of the series. But let me know who your picks are, Anthony K at sportsfluent.com, or follow us on Instagram and Twitter at sports_fluent. Now for the fix. So here's the thing about the Leafs being in the fix. If I knew the true way to fix the Leafs, I'd probably be screaming it from the rafters because it's been decades since they've been even sniffing a Stanley Cup. We know it's been over 50 years since they've won one, but I mean, I don't think they've won a playoff series since the early 2000s. They haven't been deeper than maybe the second round in, I don't know, since the 90s. So this team has a lot of issues in the playoffs. They've changed coaches, they've changed GMs, they've had a myriad of different players. Here's the thing. For those that want the Leafs to keep the core together, they'll tell you they have maybe one of the best core groups of forwards in the NHL. They're fast-paced and they can score. And that's great. The problem is they're not adaptable. They know how to play one way. That's fast and that's scoring. When they run into a team, much like they did in the qualifying round against Columbus, that was a tight checking defensive team, they sputtered. They only scored 3 5-on-5 goals the entire series in 5 games. So how do I compare the Leafs? Think of maybe the Steve Nash, Mike D'Antonio, Phoenix Suns. They were great to play. They were fun. They were fast-paced. They scored a lot of points. Everyone said career years for Amari Stoudemire and MVPs for Steve Nash. But they never made it to the finals. So do you want a team that's fun, fast-paced, great to watch, or a team that can win a championship? The way they're constructed right now, they're not winning a championship. Their defense is suspect. Their goalie is inconsistent. So for those that want to keep the core together, I say no. It's time to blow it up. Brendan Shanahan has had 6 years. He has changed GMs. He has changed coaches. And none of it has worked because he hasn't won a playoff series. So it's time to make a change top to bottom. And I know what you're thinking. Oh, another 5-year project. Yeah, probably. But it's time to blow it up and start over. You want to keep a couple of players, an Austin Matthews, a Nylander, etc., and build around a smaller core of what you already have? Okay, go ahead and do that. But let's fast-track this and understand. Teams can be fast-paced in scoring, take the Colorado Avalanche, but they need to be adaptable. And when the game slows down, they need to be able to change that style and have that fallback plan to grind one out. That's the way you win championships. Can the Leafs do that? It remains to be seen. But I'll tell you this, if they keep this core together as is with that defense and that goalie, they're not going anywhere next year either. So Leaf fans, don't get your hopes up. If nothing changes, you're going to be heartbroken again next year. That's it for this episode of Sports Fluent. Remember to follow us on Instagram and Twitter at sports_fluent or visit us at sportsfluent.com. Are you fluent?